I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we're going to share some stories of sane people fighting against insane things. Andrea Suarez outshines the homeless industrial complex yet again. King County Councilman Reagan Dunn pushes to fix the eviction backlog. And a Washington dad speaks up about his daughter's loss to a trans athlete. That and more coming up today on Undivided. We're celebrating Team Sanity on the show today. I love it. You can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Man, did we miss you guys over the long weekend. I hope you had a wonderful Memorial Day, took time to recognize what the holiday is about, unlike members of the squad who apparently put out tweets over the weekend and had no idea what Memorial Day was all about and then deleted them. But I know you guys know. And also got some time to spend perhaps with family and friends. I had a wonderful time out in Eastern Washington. Man, I crisscrossed the state. I went to Chelan for a conference. I went over to Mike and I have some property in Eastern Washington. We sat and we fished for some trout, did some catching even of trout. And then I went somewhere else, which I'll surprise you with just momentarily. I had a lot of fun this weekend. So I hope you guys did too. And we thought it was Nicole's idea, I think, just to have a little positive start to the show. And we added the story to the top of the show. And then I realized there was a theme going on in the show today. And that was sane people fighting against insane things. And as much as we complain about insane things on the show, we want to make sure that we're celebrating people who are doing everything they can to try to fix those insane things. So I want to start with Andrea Suarez and We Heart Seattle, who once again is showing that the homeless industrial complex can spend billions of dollars, but it will not get the results that a boots on the ground volunteer with a lot of passion and a lot of heart can achieve. So a little bit of background to this story. Fox 13 went out with Andrea Suarez and We Heart Seattle, and this comes on the heels of news that despite all the money we spend to deal with the homelessness crisis, homelessness in King County is actually up 23%. So we've got this massive cog government machine churning and burning through all of your money over the past decade, only to have more people living on the streets in squalor and addiction. So Fox 13, great story, by the way, from our friends over at Fox 13. They go out and they're looking at this issue and some of the encampments that are being swept. And Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle is out there as well. I want you to watch the moment where Andrea Suarez shows exactly why she is effective where the government is not.
This is what we have to do, you know what I mean? To be, you know, put in a place, because if we just go and say, hey, we want housing, put you on a list, well, it's like that day never comes.
Chrisanna Martini, she openly shared her struggles.
Definitely have a lot of anxiety, so it's kind of why I use drugs.
Drugs have been pulling her in, derailing her goals for the last year and a half. She wants to escape this and leave it all behind, but she needs help.
I need to go to detox. That's what I need to do. You know, that's the only thing that's stopping me from doing anything in my life.
Overhearing her needs was We Heart Seattle founder Andrea Suarez, who stepped up.
I will take you to detox right now.
Right now?
Right now.
A powerful moment as Chrisanna made the decision to get clean all on her own, saying goodbye to neighbors who have been her community.
I'm going to detox, bro. Yeah, I need it so bad. I couldn't pass the opportunity.
Andrea Suarez, ladies and gentlemen. That gave me the goosebumps. That's the second time I've watched it. It still gave me the goosebumps. That's what it looks like to cut through government bureaucracy and red tape. I'll note one disagreement with the Fox 13 story, which was said there at the end, that this young woman agreed to help all on her own. No, it took Andrea Suarez grabbing her by the shoulders, shaking her and saying, I will take you to detox right now. Right now. That's what it took. It took tough love, but it took love, and it took someone who had the means, because she's built these relationships over years now, to know that she could take this individual to detox right now. No lists, no government wait times. I read the rest of this Fox article, and to hear, you know, the gist of it is that, oh, you know, homelessness is, the encampments are slowly decreasing in Seattle, which I'm sure that's from the government. I don't buy it when the point in time count said in King County, homelessness is up 23%. So maybe we're seeing less visible homelessness in Seattle, which is always a good thing, right? I do think that helps with quality of life issues, but clearly the problem's not being dealt with. And it was interesting. They were saying outreach workers on this site had been providing water, trash bags, connections to shelters and other services. And it went on to talk about some guy who had been trying to get help as well. And he said he always ends up on the bottom of the list. They put you on a list, and then he always ends up on the bottom of the list, and the day never comes. During a recent visit to the encampment, police and park staff handed out notices reminding residents of the impending deadline to clear out because they were going to go in and sweep this thing. So they're doing all of this. They've got all these government workers, all these bureaucrats who go in there and say, hey, here's some trash bags. And heck, maybe they're even throwing needles at them too. Like, here's some clean, whatever it is. Oh, here's a reminder. We're going to come in and sweep. So you need to make sure, like, either maybe you want to ask us for help and services or maybe not. But if you don't, then we're going to sweep you out. Andrea Suarez goes in there. It took her all of 10 seconds to shake that woman out of her situation and to say, I'm taking you to detox right now. You make the decision. That is the difference. And that is why Andrea Suarez was probably the only Democrat I'm supporting. I don't get it just kills me inside that I don't get to vote for Andrea Suarez. But remember, we talked on the show last week how she's running for state house in the 43rd legislative district, which represents a part of Seattle. And she's running as a Democrat, which I wish she'd run as an independent. Kind of hard to win as an independent these days, but she's running as a Democrat. And so I wish her well in that endeavor. I hope that if she wins, she doesn't get bogged down in the government bureaucracy and can still successfully do what she has been doing out on the streets. But man, if that isn't an example of, I could do a million segments talking about why the homeless industrial complex is a failure, and nothing would illustrate it better than those 10 seconds of Andrea Suarez showing what success looks like. So that is a win for Team Sanity. Also on Team Sanity is Riley Gaines. You obviously know who Riley Gaines is by now. She was a collegiate swimmer, started to speak out and push back against having to compete against biological men, said the very controversial thing of, that's not fair. I can never be faster or stronger or more of an athlete than a biological man. And one of the things that I love that Riley Gaines has used her voice for is to speak out about what's happening to girls in sports at all levels, and to use, you know, this following that she's built to try to bring people over to Team Sanity and Team Common Sense. And Lord knows we need it over here on the West Coast. On last week's show, we showed you the clip of a Oregon State track race where, shock of the century, the fastest person happened to be a biological boy who won in Oregon. Well, the same thing happened this Saturday at the Washington State track meet, where a biological boy crushed the girls in the 400-meter race. Here's a video. Yeah, and there were some other videos going around that showed the crowd booing. I'm sorry, like, I feel bad. Do I feel bad? Yeah, as I've said before, it's not about the male, biological male trans athlete. I don't want to make it about vilifying them, but I do want to make it about standing up for women. And I think in that moment, booing shows that the crowd really understood that that was not fair. I mean, if you've ever been in track or watched a track meet, 400 meters is just once around. To see that much of a gap between the first place finisher and the second place finisher is highly unusual when all of the people in the race are of the same gender. You'd be talking about a neck and neck fraction of a second difference. But that's obviously not the case here, because as talented, I'm sure, as those female athletes are who made it to the state track meet only to lose to a biological boy, they can never compete. They'll never be able to compete and win. Riley Gaines tweeted this out. Would you look at that? The thing that never happens happened again. Veronica Garcia just won the Washington State Championship in the girls 400 meter in total domination. In Washington and Oregon this past week, the fastest girl in each state has been a boy. No lies detected. It's an incredibly frustrating situation, and I like how she framed it that way. Would you look at that? The thing that never happens happened again. This happens more than people on the left who are propping up this insane ideology care to admit. But I would also point out, I don't care if it happens once or if it happens 1,000 times. It has happened too much. To have any young athlete put the work in and the time in and the training in to rise to be the best in their sport at their level, whether it's freaking elementary school or middle school or high school or college or pro, to do that, to rise to be the best, only to be beaten by someone who biologically, you cannot compete with, is an absurd place to be. And it's offensive to girls and to women. I would just note that we've been talking about this issue quite a bit on the show. And honestly, that's because more and more people are speaking out about it. More and more people are joining Team Sanity on this issue. One of them is a dad named Brendan Wilson, whose daughter, we discussed this story last week, lost to a biological boy at the Junior Olympic track meet in Washington State, in Kashmir. And his daughter, who took second place, lost by 7 seconds in the mile run. 7 seconds. That's significant. And this is a 14-year-old girl who is the best of the best for her age among girls, but again, cannot compete against a biological boy who's bigger, faster, stronger. I think one of the devastating things about hearing Brendan Wilson, who was obviously on Team Sanity, but I, you know, kind of an unwilling participant, I could tell from his face, he just was like, gosh, I gotta speak out about this. All you politicians, coaches, everyone, you're not gonna say jack, so now it falls on me as a parent to speak out about this obvious nonsense. So we had him on Sundays with Subscribers this week, and he talked a lot about what his daughter went through, you know, beating herself up, wondering what could I have done? How hard could I have trained harder? When the answer is obviously no, you were the best of the best for girls, and then they raced you against a biological boy, which she found out, by the way, as the race was starting. She kind of realized, I don't think she knew for sure that she was racing against a boy, but it kind of physically was clear, and the parents, everyone, it was a complete surprise. It wasn't like she went into the race and went into the Junior Olympic track meet being like, yeah, I gotta run against that trans athlete and, you know, their times are so much significantly better than mine. Couldn't even prepare herself for it. Had no clue, blindsided, lost by 7 seconds when she should have won. So Brendan Wilson was on Sundays with Subscribers. I just want to play a clip for you of kind of what do we do from here and his hope that other people will start speaking up about this nonsense. I know you said you're going to speak to elected leaders and you're reaching out to the powers that be. For any who might be watching this, what would you say to them?
Well, I would just say I think that we need to make sure that women's sports is allowed to be protected as it's already been designed to be through previous legislation like Title IX, to allow women's sports to be fair so that women can compete against women on a fair playing field. And it's a sensitive topic with trans athletes and where they belong, but I feel like women and girls don't deserve the burden of where trans athletes belong. That's not something that I feel like women should have to take on. Women have worked really hard to get to the point where they have sports available to them throughout middle school, high school, college, and beyond at all levels. And that's being threatened by what's happening currently without controls on who is able to compete fairly. And I feel like we need stricter controls. High school and college in Washington, I think, should have the same types of rules the NCAA and smaller schools have, that there are criteria that has to be met before they're able to enter athletic competitions fairly.
Yeah. Amen, Brendan. I mean, I don't know if you might not feel like it now, but I'm telling you, what you're doing is important. What you're doing is really important. I know it's not easy, but it is. And I wish, as you said, you've talked to parents who are like, we didn't want to say anything. But that's part of the problem is reasonable people feel this way, but they don't want to say anything because it's scary to say something, but good for you.
And I would say one more thing that I have seen. We've had so many parents speak to us in person and through text messages, emails, Facebook, other social media just saying thank you for saying something. There's so many people that feel exactly the same way and are not feeling comfortable with coming forward unless other people do. And I know that we've had so many people want to support us and are currently supporting us in this ability to speak out. And I know that more people will come forward because the majority of people feel this way about this issue.
100%.
And that should count for something.
Yeah, again, that's Brandon Wilson. His daughter took second place at the Junior Olympic track meet in Kashmir, lost to a biological boy. He's now firmly in Team Sanity, speaking out about this nonsense, hopes other people will start to speak out about it too. You can watch our full interview on Sundays with subscribers, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. We've kind of been couching some of those interviews on the Sunday show because, you know, they're in-depth conversations and that's the best platform for them. Also, I'll just say, selfishly, it kind of reduces some of our fear of being deplatformed over sharing these interviews. You know, we put out clips of it, obviously, but a lot of the interviews we've been doing on transgender issues, for instance, the kinds of things that YouTube just flags and Facebook flags and all of this, it's not that we're not brave, like we'll push this stuff out on those public platforms, but when we get into some of the more in-depth conversations about especially transgender youth, to be deplatformed over a legitimate conversation is a real, real risk. But I think as more people start to speak up, the risk of that goes down a little bit. So big thanks to Brandon Wilson for not only standing up for his daughter, but for young women, girls everywhere who are dealing with this. So we will have much more on this topic. So what do we got now? Three members of Team Sanity highlighted already in the first block of the show with more to come. Andrea Suarez, Riley Gaines, Brandon Wilson. We'll have one more coming up for you next. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, especially if you're feeling the pinch financially right now, which I know a lot of people are, man. Prices are so high on so many things. And so as a family, if you've looked at your budget and said, we've cut out the things that are not necessities, then what else can you do? Well, if you are dealing with insurance on your own, there's a high likelihood if you go through an insurance broker and they've got a bunch of different companies that they can look to, that they can find you a better price. We've heard from so many of you who took the First Mark Challenge who saw those kinds of results. Casey in Covington says that First Mark saved them 37% off their auto quote for the same coverage they had before. Let's see, Ben Bailey, our friend Ben Bailey, took the First Mark Challenge. He told us that he and his wife, Leslie, saved over $1,500 a year. Here's Ben.
It was really kind of drilling down and looking at the current coverages that we have today. And if those were adequate for, you know, say, if we had a major incident here at the house, you know, were our cars covered adequately? Or were they actually, in our case, over covered, right? We have one car that's fairly new and another one that's, you know, a few years old. And the one that was a few years old actually has had too much coverage on it. So that helped as well.
Yeah. And I mean, $1,500 a year, that is significant, especially when you really feel like, hey, we've cut where we can cut. Well, have you tried taking the First Mark Challenge? So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they have your best interest in mind. All right. This Saturday, you guys want to hang out in Bellevue? Nicole, do you want to hang out with
I do.
Me in Bellevue?
I do okay. want to hang out in Bellevue.
I don't like going to events without Nicole because, well, you're just so much fun. But also, I'm just alone, you know, and occasionally at an event, we'll have somebody who wants to come up and, like, yell at me about politics or speak to me about politics for 35 minutes straight without asking me any questions or letting me speak. So it's good to have, like, you know, to tag team those things. However, mm-hmm. you guys don't do that. I'm actually surprised. Can I just say this quick? Totally tangent. I am surprised how utterly normal people are who come to our events.
Our people, for sure.
Our people, like, you guys don't understand. I mean, like, sometimes when you do events like this, like when I was in radio or TV, you always got a few whack jobs who show up and, like, want something weird from you. At our events, like, never. It's because you guys are normal. Thank you for being normal. But anyway, that aside, Saturday, we are having a super signing event for Initiative 2066. So Let's Go Washington. Brian Haywood asked us, hey, Brandy, will you come host a super signing event? Because the clock is ticking on this thing. I mean, this will make sure that state lawmakers don't ban natural gas. It would continue to give you a choice and not have to electrify your home for $40,000 or $70,000. So we're going to be in Bellevue on 112th Avenue Northeast. It's an outside signing event. So you can just roll up, you can get signed, do all that. So we're hosting that along with Building Industry Association of Washington and Let's Go WA. So I hope that you guys can make it there. But this is a really critical issue. And one of the things that it's related to as well for people, I think, in trying to get individuals to understand this issue, I actually think is pretty easy. Because it's like, do you want to continue to have a choice to use natural gas in your home or not? But there's also the financial aspect of it, right? Like, even if you wouldn't mind, you know, electrifying your home, if the government forces you to do it in 3 years, are you going to be able to pay for that? Can you afford to come out of pocket $40,000 potentially to change your home and to electrify it? I think for a lot of people, the answer is no. Where in the world would they come up with that kind of money? And so this is really just about giving people a choice. And so I hope if you haven't signed it yet, you can stop by in Bellevue on Saturday to sign Initiative 2066. If you can't, go to letsgowa.com, letsgowa.com, and you can order. They can send you sheets to fill out. And you can, it's a sheet, I think they have 20 on a sheet. And you can fill out, you can have you sign it, your family, a couple of your neighbors, and you can send it back half full. But you can do it that way as well. And they also have a map on their website of all the different signing locations and stuff if you need to do it that way. Because I understand you might not be able to get to Bellevue on Saturday.
I saw a couple of friends of the show that had it at their barbecues this weekend.
Oh my God, that's genius.
On Father's Day, there's an opportunity. Have it ready for Father's Day barbecues.
Yeah.
So order it now.
That's like what the poets do when they're instead of applauding.
There yes. you go.
Bring it to your barbecue. And what I was trying to say is they have to collect more than 400,000 signatures by July 4th. This timeline is tight. It's tight. And so everybody needs to be on board. But I'll tell you, I posted that graphic on Facebook and I just said, hey, join us on Saturday. And you should see the comments. Everyone's like, already signed it. Signed it at this place, signed it at this place. I was like, that is on a roll. So just wanted to remind you guys of that. Okay, one of the things that I think is tied to the effort to ban natural gas is what that would do to home prices. It would send them sky high because, and also for renters, right? It would, if you have a home that's being rented out and you're gonna have to electrify it, who do you think the landlord's gonna pass that cost along to? Well, the tenant over time. So this issue is tied into a bunch of other things. We've been working with the Rental Housing Association. We partnered with them to do a weekly segment to bring attention to these issues and to the insane state of our landlord-tenant laws and everything that's going on. And as much as we complain about, you know, how crazy the eviction situation is, serial squatting and all of that, our guest today on the segment is someone who's actually trying to fix some of this nonsense. Again, a member of Team Sanity. It's King County Councilman Reagan Dunn, who sent out a couple letters to his colleagues with the council with some ideas to address these things. One, he wants an audit of the Housing Justice Project, which we've talked about. Also in one of these letters, he talked about increasing funding to help with the eviction backlog, because right now the eviction backlog is insane, like it's pushing into 2025. So Councilman Reagan Dunn was nice enough to join us on the show today to talk about some of the problems, yes, but to talk about some of his ideas to turn things around. Reagan Dunn, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to this conversation because we complain a lot about what's happening to landlords and some of the crazy policies and Housing Justice Project, but you're bringing solutions to the table. Let's see if your fellow council members are willing to accept such solutions, but we'll discuss that. So first, can we just get the Housing Justice Project thing out of the way for a second? Insane. I mean, it's insane that they would be using funds to write a $50,000 check for a guy who just has decided that he's not going to pay rent. So help me clear up one thing. How much of that is taxpayer money? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, almost all of it is. I mean, King County puts $16 million in every budget cycle to Housing Justice Project. And that's not the only money they get. They get a significant amount of money from the state as well. So when Housing Justice writes a big check for, in my opinion, a squatter, what you're doing is you're taking money that could be used for people who really need it. Let's think about the single mom with two children who really is, she lost a job. She had a medical bill that came up, unexpected expense. Somebody who sincerely needs the assistance and isn't gaming the system. And that's why the judgment is called into question with respect to the decisions made by Housing Justice Project, and it causes all real concern.
Well, and it should be uncontroversial for that reason that you just articulated. I mean, I got on social media and I invited anyone of the sort of housing is a human right sentiment to come on and debate me on that, because you bring up a good point. How many people could you have helped down on their luck, renters, with $50,000? So you are proposing a couple things. One is an audit. And the other is to sort of put more rules in place, right, for Housing Justice Project. So walk us through your proposal.
Well, okay, with respect to Housing Justice Project, the first and most obvious is an audit. We can, as a granting agency, King County grants $16 million to Housing Justice. We set conditions on those grants, one of which is that that money should be used for poor folks, folks who are at what we call at or below 200% of the federal poverty line, which is like $61,000 for a family of four or less. And we're seeing that money go to somebody who reported $400,000 in annual income. And so the policies are clear from our end. Housing Justice has disputed that policy applies. I think an audit will clear that up and see to what extent other recipients in that wealthy class or multi-million dollar home, which is obviously not the kind of thing taxpayer money should be going to fund. What's been going on there? We really want to see that. And then with respect to Housing Justice, we want to take a good hard look at what the standards are going to be moving forward, so it's accomplishing our goal. Because, you know, that $16 million, there's a lot of nonprofits out there that help with housing support, and we could be putting that money to other nonprofits who are going to be putting it in the area that is most likely to help single mom, maybe a senior who's fallen on hard times, the medical bill, not people who are squatting or gaming the system. That's not where this should go. So if you're lying on applications, I don't believe you should receive the benefit of taxpayer subsidies. If you're honest, you've fallen on hard times, that's where the safety net should apply.
Yeah. You mentioned that phrase, gaming the system. I want to talk about that in a moment. But first, just on the audit, I'm assuming you can't call for an audit just on an island, right? So what kind of support, I mean, why wouldn't the King County Council and your colleagues on the council on the other side of the aisle agree with you that that's necessary?
Well, and they haven't said no yet. Okay. We hope the legislation gets heard. I know there's at least two other council members that have serious concerns. So I need five votes. I think I got around three so far. I'll keep working on it.
Okay.
The auditor, though, is an independent professional, independent. We call it an independent office holder appointed by the King County Council. And the auditor, she could make a decision on her own to do it, or the executive could weigh in and suggest an audit as well. So I think there is a real possibility that an audit might happen. And what, you know, there's nothing wrong with transparency. Let's find out what's what. So I hope that happens, but it also is a tool to help start community conversation like we're having now about how effective that whole regime has been in helping people who really need it.
Yeah, that would be really shocking and disappointing if they weren't willing to just take a closer look at this with all the red flags. So we want to know if that comes to a standstill, because we want to talk about that and point out that that would just be insane. And then on the, you know, you mentioned gaming the system. The Housing Justice Project doesn't just cut checks to people. It also provides them with attorneys, for instance, if they're going through an eviction process. From the stories we've heard, you know, Jason Roth in Seattle is a high profile one. It really seems like the Housing Justice Project gets in there and just tries to intentionally delay these things for as long as they can to keep people in housing. Would that fly in the face of what the county believes it's funding?
Yeah, I think if it's done in bad faith, it may well run afoul of the rules we put forward. I mean, look. If you sign a contract, a lease is a contract. You agree to pay money to lease a property. If you stop paying, you know, you breach the lease, you're no longer entitled to be there. What most, I think, reasonable people do is if you get, you know, 5, 6, 7 months behind, it's getting out of reach, you can't get public assistance, what you do is you move out. And, you know, you go find another place that's, maybe it's a little farther away, but it's less.
Yeah.
What you don't do, and what I think this system's been encouraging, it is game the system by staying as long as you can, knowing There are legal delays, legal protections. There's a lot of reasons why that's not good. Here's one. The landlord, it might be a mom and pop landlord with one house or two houses, that's their sole income. They are on the hook for the taxes, for the mortgage, for the utilities, and it puts them underwater. And we have had cases here in King County recently where landlords file for bankruptcy. You know, that's one. The other thing it does is it creates a substantial amount of money that that renter will owe a judgment in court, and it's going to be additional back rent. And there's a bunch of other things, legal fees, et cetera. So it's in everybody's best interest to just move out. If you can't make it work, do the right thing, move out. But what Housing Justice is doing is the opposite, keeping them in as long as they can. And I think that's short-sighted because the resources being used for that, both in terms of legal fees, legal time, and the subsidies by the government, is taking much-needed money away from the people who really need it.
Yeah, yeah. And much like some of the COVID funds that just prop people up for too long, and then they were left in a worse situation almost than when they started off. I don't think it helps the tenants ultimately either. So we're not saying don't help anybody. Reagan's not saying that. I'm not saying that. We're saying let's make sure that the money is helping people who really need it. That should be non-controversial.
Right.
I want to talk about the backlogs quick. I did not realize the extent. I knew it was bad. I did not realize the extent of the eviction backlog until you sent Nicole the details of it. In King County, it's insane. Can you characterize how bad it is for me?
Yeah, I mean, we used to have less than 500 cases, eviction cases processing at any one time all in. Now we have 2,200, and that number is going up by almost 400 every month. There are 600 new cases filed for evictions every month. We can only process about a third to a quarter of those because of our capacity. And so what you have is this massive line around the block, a couple times around the block at the courthouse for landlords to evict tenants. We've never seen like this. And there's a bunch of reasons for it. But one is the eviction moratorium that was passed by a lot of different jurisdictions. The other was that all of that, those subsidies dried up that was there for the pandemic. Another, of course, is the work by these nonprofits in some cases that actually artificially keep people in housing when they shouldn't. There's policies that are a problem too. Like, you know, Seattle, you can't evict in the wintertime. You can't evict when kids are in school. In King County, unincorporated, you cannot demand a credit score of somebody who's applying to rent a unit. Well, I mean, of course you're going to have tenants that aren't going to end up being able to pay in some circumstances. And that's why evictions are necessary, which is why we have an eviction crisis. And so it's funny, right now, you know, I want to do an audit of Housing Justice. I think it's important to focus on their work. But we need to increase the pipeline of the process where government honors contract and lease law, where evictions happen. There's nobody better positioned, Brandy, than a court commissioner who's trained in these areas to determine whether somebody is legitimately a squatter, you know, or is just a really bad tenant or is, you know, breaking windows and breaking walls and doing illegal activity, or somebody who's only a couple months behind who's had a hard time that looks like they're going to catch up. Those commissioners can decide what's what and determine whether an eviction's appropriate. That's what we need to fund. That's where we need to put our resources. And it's a tiny, tiny, tiny investment that's much needed in King County. It will have profound effects throughout the rental housing stream.
Yeah, for that backlog and the commissioners, how many is there? I heard there's only three? Three commissioners
right.
in for King County for all those backlog cases?
Yeah, and that's a little tricky part of state law, which says every county gets up to three commissioners for
wow.
that. Well, when that law was written a century ago or whatever it was, I mean, King County is now a third of the state population. 46% of the economic activity and retail base is in King County. Obviously, we don't have enough bodies to process it. So Mark Mullett had a bill that was almost passed just a few months ago. It was killed for political reasons, but we'll be redoubling our effort with bipartisan support, and I expect we'll have that pass. So my job now is to get the money for more commissioners and staff. At the same time, we're dual tracking this legislative change, and so that early next year we can hire some more commissioners to get this process moving along.
Yeah. So let's end here. If I am a landlord in King County and I need to evict someone and I start that process today, How long might I have to wait for that to be adjudicated?
No, it's going to take you a year. Wow. You won't get an initial hearing until at least February, probably March of 2025, and then several more months probably to get a resolution. And again, that's 12 months that the landlord's on the hook for paying utilities, taxes, the mortgage, and it's another 12 months that that tenant is getting farther and farther debt that they will ultimately have to satisfy when a landlord gets a judgment, garnishes their wages, attaches their property, or liens on their building. None of it is good. Everything is good when the process moves quicker, and it's not doing that.
How do we get here? I mean, I know that's kind of a rhetorical question, but this is an insane place to be to try to dig ourselves out of.
Well, let me just say something here, because these policies are all interrelated, all right? Washington State and King County has some of the most aggressive land use restrictions in terms of building housing. The regulatory climate in King County and Washington State, or what I call the regulatory overhang, makes it very, very expensive to build housing. And there's very little land we can build on. And so you have a shortage of supply. That's part of the problem. You've got all of these control systems that are put in place, eviction moratoriums, things like rent control, things like you can't increase the rent more than 7%. You have to give a 6-month warning. You can't check credit. All the things that people think they're doing good to help renters actually ends up reducing the amount of housing stock. When there's less stock, prices go up, and then we have this problem with not enough available housing. They're all interrelated, and it's unfortunate. And so I'm in a town hall the other day where a 25-year-old, college-educated, college degree, working. His wife, also 25, has a college degree, working. They're both working. And he asked me this question: Reagan, I'm playing by the rules. I've done everything I'm supposed to do. I went to college. My wife went to college. We both have jobs, and we cannot afford to live in King County. What can we do? And the answer is, your elected leaders have failed. That's what's happened here. They're failed policies that aren't working. We've got to turn it around. And so at least this is a start. We hope we can make progress here.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you articulating how big the problem is. And it's coming from all angles. And like the story you mentioned, and I don't know how that 25-year-old votes. No idea. It doesn't matter. But when it comes to, you know, there's one side of the aisle that talks about housing affordability and all of that. And I agree, you know, we need to address that issue. But then they do things like try to restrict natural gas use, which, what do you think that's going to do to the cost of a home? You know, if a landlord has to go in and electrify their home for $40,000, you think they're going to eat that? Or do you think they're going to make it more expensive for the people who are renting that home? And so it's all that stuff that just doesn't compute to me. Like, oh, affordable housing crisis, like, let's make it more expensive. And I'm just sort of like, time out. So anyway, Reagan, thank you for being a voice of sanity and for working on solutions to these issues, not just complaining about it like we do on this show. So we appreciate you. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brandy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate that someone is working to actually put forth proposals to rein in this insanity. Nobody should. That's not controversial. Writing a $50,000 check with taxpayer funds for a guy who already got a check previously, who hasn't been paying rent despite records that show he actually has a substantial income? Come on. I mean, that's not controversial. You can't do that. Think about how many people you could have helped. I'll also note, AvGeek Joe just said in the comments, he said, if you want to testify to the King County Council today at 1:30 p.m. You can do that. You can do it remotely and you can testify and say, hey, you support what Reagan Dunn is trying to do. You support an audit of the Housing Justice Project. You support perhaps more funds being directed at ending this eviction backlog to help out landlords who are just in this crazy holding pattern that's costing them a ton of money. Really common sense stuff here. That segment is brought to you by the Rental Housing Association of Washington, who we've teamed up with to do a weekly segment bringing these issues to the forefront. And heck, if you're a housing provider, a landlord, and you're not a member of RHA yet, you need to become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. It's like $260 for an entire year, and they can help make sure that you avoid situations like some of the ones that we've highlighted on this show. So go check them out, rhawa.org. I also made this subject the topic of our daily subscriber show poll today, specifically about the King County Housing Justice Project. what do you do with it? I mean, as Reagan said, it's getting $16 million a year from King County, additional money from the state. It is very clear that there is a lack of oversight, that they're abusing those taxpayer funds to try to help people game the system. So in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, I asked you, what do you think needs to happen to the Housing Justice Project? Do you defund it now? Do you simply tighten the rules on who gets financial help and how much? Or do you audit first and then proceed from there? You guys are pretty split between defund it now and auditing first, then proceeding from there. I tend to agree with the audit it first. And here's why, because if they were to just defund it and agree that, hey, this has been a boondoggle, let's just cut money to it, then you might never know. You might never find out the extent of the corruption. At least if you audit it, you hopefully would have an accounting of who did what with what money and for what end, and then you can defund the thing from there. George says, audit first, find out where all that money went. Amen. Michelle Hills says, I think it needs to be all three. Stop spending money now, audit and redefine the rules with clear standard operating procedures. Then it can be put back in place to help those who actually need it. And look, if you defunded it, I think that would be fine. But I do think there needs to be help out there for people who genuinely are behind a little bit of rent for a month. And that's what RHA talked to us about on last week's segment. They're trying to push statewide policy that would basically say, here's a fund that would be very limited in scope for assistance for people who truly, you know, medical bill came up, can't cover rent this month. It would be a one-time assistance. There would be a cap on how much it is. And that's actually helping out the landlords too, because then if it's just going to be that month, you can help them make up the difference. And then the landlord doesn't have to wait a year while an eviction is processed, or, you know, try to find a new person. You know, if you have a tenant who decides, okay, I'm just going to move out, I can't pay, like normal tenants do, all that time and energy finding a new tenant when you just had someone who was just behind a little bit and needed a little bit of assistance. So I don't know if I'm not in favor of getting rid of that assistance entirely as much as I am about personal responsibility and limited government, because a little bit of injection of cash to the right people could actually help out a lot of people in the long run. Okay, a couple more comments here I want to read from Locals. Tina, ultimately, I believe it should be defunded, but we should ensure the audit is done so as not to allow this to happen again. And what would be controversial about an audit? Except progressives who want to hide what they know is happening. There is no reason the King County auditor should not be willing to, on their own accord, do an audit of a government-funded program, especially at a time when King County, Seattle are complaining, oh, we don't have any money, we have to cut all these things. How about you look into how the money that you do have is being spent? So we're going to be tracking that closely. Let's see if they say no to doing an audit. All right. Natchez RV Resort is our latest sponsor on the podcast. Beautiful, beautiful place. I'll tell you, I'm going to say in a moment, I went out to Natchez RV Resort this weekend. I did. So I was, you know, all over the state, and I was like, you know, I can make a little swing down to the Yakima area and meet Tig with Natchez RV Resort. And I got to see firsthand what he's been telling us about. And one of those things is sort of the size of the lot and what you get for the money.
It's an awesome location with an abundance of outdoor activity, 300 days of sunshine, so we can get away from the doom and gloom here on the west side. The resort itself, we sit 2 miles outside of town and up above town, so we get these beautiful views. The resort itself is nicely landscaped at the entrance, big water feature coming in. It is all electronic gated entrance coming in and out, and you have full hookups at every lot. That includes both 30 amp and 50 amp power at each pedestal for each individual lot. And they're big lots. We'll average, say, 4,000 square feet.
Yeah. So I got to see that firsthand. It was just beautiful out there. You know what I did while I was out there? So I got an email from a listener, Michelle Harryford, who's like, hey, I bought a lot out at Natchez RV Resort. Michelle, I personally checked on your lot for you. I'm happy to report it's still there. No one's squatting in it. And so I went out there and I was like, Ty, take me to Michelle's lot. So Michelle, I checked in on your future getaway destination. So I thought that was fun. I also, while I was out there, they have a dog park. And you know what they have at the dog park? They have like dog agility.
Oh.
They had a couple dog agility things. And I took Lucky through the dog agility. Didn't go well. Our dog did not complete the dog agility. Anyway, so they're in grand opening phase two, and they've extended grand opening phase two pricing. So if you're looking for a place that's plug and play with your RV, a little getaway destination, people out there were super nice. So you can go to NatchesRVResort.com, NatchesRVResort.com, make a reservation to go see Tig. He'll take you around on a golf cart like he did for me. There's a lot of beautiful lots with great views still available. So 800-422-6009, 800-422-6009, NatchesRVResort.com. That's the lengths I go to for you guys. That was a 3-hour detour, all said and done. Because, right, you got to go, I would have gone Ellensburg down and then back up.
Right.
About that. Maybe two hours. Let's not be too dramatic about it. I was like, I want to go see this place. And it was beautiful. I would love to have an RV and then a place, a little sane place to get away. And it would take me a week to get lucky going through the doggy agility like a champ. One of them was the, you know, it's like a teeter-totter.
Yeah.
Is that what you call it? Teeter-totter? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, the dog runs up and then it falls down. She did not like
it. You made her run up it and it did fall down?
Mike kind of grabbed her, like helped her along, and then she went up, and then she's like, oh, nope, and just bailed off the side.
Yeah. So, anyway. I actually have a family member that's going to give them a ring.
Yeah, so they should. And then maybe we'll have a place to go. Oh, good. We got there and Mike came with me and I was like, you're not buying anything today because we don't have an RV yet. We already have all these other bills. And so I was like telling Tig, I was like, listen, maybe one day. But right now, we're going to find a friend here. We're going to find a friend who already has an RV who we can come stay with. So your family member would be a really good idea. All right, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. So if you want to take your family in the long weekend to the Wing Luke Museum in Seattle, it was closed. Too bad. Couldn't do it. Why? Well, some woke activist employees of theirs decided to walk off the job in protest of an exhibit called Confronting Hate. Why did they protest? Well, it wasn't confronting the right kind of hate. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Oh, well, the anti-Semites, they really know no limits. So at Wing Luke Museum in Seattle, there is an exhibit called Confronting Hate, collaboration between the Black Heritage Society of Washington State, the Washington State Jewish Historical Society, and the Wing Luke Museum. So it focuses on art, history of Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders. But there's also, of course, you know, a Jewish component. What population of people has endured an awful lot of hate in this world? Jewish people. Well, apparently you cannot talk about hate directed at Jewish people. Absolutely cannot do it. So some employees of the museum decided that they were not comfortable working in a museum that would dare highlight the hatred toward Jewish individuals. So they simply left. This is from MyNorthwest.com. About 24 employees of Seattle's Wing Luke Museum staged a walkout Wednesday to protest the exhibition that was set to begin its run that day. So it was supposed to be up and running on Wednesday, not so much now. And then they posted their four demands. Oh, gosh, let's hear them. Remove any language in any Wing Luke Museum publication and question any partnerships that attempt to frame Palestinian liberation and anti-Zionism as anti-Semitism. Acknowledge the limited perspectives presented in this exhibition. Missing perspectives include those of namely Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim communities. Engage in a community review of the exhibit. Center voices and perspectives that align with the museum's mission and values by platforming community stories within an anti-colonial, anti-white supremacist framework. These people, they're mentally unstable. And it's like they cannot, and this was true for a lot of politicians when they put out statements about the anti-Israel, pro-Palestine protests. Remember, they'd always bring up Islamophobia. And that was one of the demands of the UW campus, to disband their clearly anti-Semitic protest. One of their demands was that the university met that they were going to focus more on Islamophobia. Nothing in the list of demands met to talk about anti-Semitism. So they're incapable of acknowledging that we can talk, first of all, we can have conversations about both, but it doesn't have to be at the same time. We can talk about the horrors that Jewish people have endured and are enduring today without having to couch it in, oh yeah, but Islamophobia. It's insane to me. It's wild. And the Wing Luke Museum, of course, like any Seattle institution, oh, it's fine. It's fine. They put out this long statement on their Facebook page talking about, oh, the it says, on Wednesday, May 22nd, members of the museum staff held a respectful walkout in protest of content on display in a new exhibit. No, there's no respectful way to walk out when you're throwing a hissy fit over highlighting hatred against Jewish people. Like, that's what you're protesting? You're protesting an exhibit called Confronting Hate? And you think you're progressive? Insane stuff. Oh, it's colonialism. Just crazy. It says the Wingluke Museum is and will continue to be committed to addressing challenging issues in our work. We expected Confronting Hate Together, an exhibit that explores anti-Asian American, Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander hate, Black hate and anti-Jewish hate, to be a learning opportunity that invites us to seek out and understand others' perspectives. As an organization rooted in dialogue, we acknowledge and support the right of our staff to express their beliefs and personal truths, and to this end, we are holding space for a careful and thoughtful process of listening with intent to hear multiple perspectives in pursuit of a mutual way forward. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that the left wing is going to spend time and energy protesting, and the museum's going to spend time kowtowing to? Wasn't it? Will you Google, Nicole? Once a show, I'm like, Google this. Wasn't it the Wingluke Museum that was the victim of anti-Jewish, like, vandalism? And it was a white guy. And this is like a couple of years ago. I swear it was the Wingluke. And the left lost its ever-loving mind about it. It was a white dude who was like, there's something about that. So it's like, white people, you know, if you're anti-Jewish, you're a Nazi, which I tend to agree. Oh, but the pro-Palestines, we're anti-Jewish, but that's just because we're woke. It's wild stuff.
I think it was anti-Chinese or
specifically. Oh, yeah. There was something like that. I'll figure it out. Sorry. I just, like, these things come up to my mind.
And then they made a mural to fix it or something. Right. So, yeah.
But it's like, if you had, again, I keep going back to it. How many times do I have to say this? If it was right-wing neo-Nazis hating on Jewish people, the left would lose its ever-loving mind. And now they're doing the same thing, but under the guise of, oh, pro-Palestine and fighting against Islamophobia. It's the same thing. You're Nazis too. Wild. Okay, we'll get to some national news coming up next. Biden must be desperate because he has trotted out an A-list celebrity to make the case for him. First, if you're thinking about selling your home at some point in 2024, reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this in this market for a long time, and he knows what he's talking about. Our friends Bryce and Carla, who watched the show, they saw our advertisements for Wes, and they decided when they went to sell their home in Bellevue and moved to Florida to retire that they were going to reach out to him, and they said that they were just so impressed by his knowledge of the market and also about how to successfully sell the home at a time when interest rates are pretty high.
His attention to detail, he was extraordinarily detailed, and he knew our neighborhood and our properties in the neighborhood very well. He gave us a really great comp plan, showed us what other properties were selling for, and most importantly, he helped us to understand the dangers of overpricing. And we thought what we knew we could get for the property, but we didn't, you know, at the same time, he breathed an air of reality into us, said, look, guys, you want to get that out of the property, you're going to need to start at a certain point, and you're going to let the market come to you. And that's exactly what happened. He was exactly right about that.
Yeah, they sold their home in 7 days for over list price, and now they're living their life in sunny Florida. So check out sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator right there on the website to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, so Trump's trial thing is going on, whatever, and Biden's team is in panic mode, like full-fledged meltdown. He's losing, if not in every battleground state, in almost every battleground state in the polls. There was one that was sort of on the fence. And then you know, the trial and the judge, it was supposed to be about keeping Trump off the campaign trail. I mean, that seems what it's about. And then, you know, not going to some of these battleground states. But what did it do? Well, it left Trump to campaign in the backyard of the Democrats, going up to Harlem and all this stuff. And he was welcomed with open arms there. So now Democrats are like, oh, no, what do we do here? So they realized no one's paying attention to Biden's campaign. So members of Biden's campaign went down to where the media was to cover the Trump trial, literally said, at the beginning, we're here not because of the Trump trial, but we're here because this is where you are. Mm-hmm. So they're like, all the media's down there paying attention to Trump. So we're just going to show up there and speak. And they decided they're so desperate, the numbers aren't looking good, that they were going to trot out an A-list celebrity to try to make the case for Americans as to why it is such a dire situation, the prospect of having a second term of Donald Trump.
Under Trump, this kind of government will perish from the earth. I don't mean to scare you. No, wait, maybe I do mean to scare you. If Trump returns to the White House, you can kiss these freedoms goodbye that we all take for granted. And elections, forget about it. That's over. That's done. If he gets in, I can tell you right now, he will never leave. He will never leave. You know that. He will never leave.
Didn't he? Robert De Niro. I didn't know he was like this.
Oh. Didn't. Oh, he's been like this for a while. He has TDS. Big time.
Type 1, right? Obviously.
Yeah.
Didn't he leave once? Trump was in office. He left.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, you could argue, you know, January 6th, like maybe his people or he didn't want to leave, but he left, right? Let's see. He says all of that, the fear-mongering and all of that. I mean, not even fear-mongering. He's just saying, yes, I am trying to scare you. Leaves Americans with only one choice. You got to vote for Joe.
And that's why I've joined the Biden-Harris campaign, because the only way to preserve our freedoms and hold on to our humanity is to vote for Joe Biden for president. Really? We don't have a choice.
Who thinks of these things? And did they not ask him, like, hey, what are you going to say? Do you have it planned out and all of that? I love the car horn in the background. We have no choice. We do have a choice. And the fact that you think we don't have a choice, like, is so contrary to what you're trying to say about, oh, democracy in peril and all of this. Yeah. If that was like their ace in the hole, fell a little flat. Absolutely did not go the way they intended that to go. I just don't get it. Nicole and I always joke, if we ever just don't want to do the podcast anymore, we're going to run election people's campaigns.
Consult.
We're going to consult, because mm-hmm. you look at some of these things and you're like, wow, whose idea was that? Whose idea was that? Somebody made a lot of money to recruit Robert De Niro and have the idea to bring him down to where the Trump trial was happening, have a disaster of a press conference where he himself sounds like a stuttering old fool. At least if you're going to get an A-list celebrity, like, get a younger one who, you know, can excite people and put a few sentences together without reading off his sheet, because that's kind of one of the primary issues with Biden that you're trying to, I don't know, combat here. But also, whose mind are you changing? Whose mind are you changing with that? Really? To say, oh, Trump will never leave office, we have no choice but to vote for Biden. That message is appealing to no one who's undecided. Like, that doesn't move the needle on anything. You're just screaming out what, you know, Democrats have been screaming out about Trump for 9 years. And so that's what I don't understand, too, is who are you appealing to there? First, I don't believe that there's an awful lot of undecided voters. Man, that's a weird place to be if you're undecided between Trump and Biden. Now, Nicole will be like, but Brandy, you're undecided.
Nah.
And I'm not between Trump and Biden. I'm not undecided. If Trump and Biden, Trump, obviously.
Wait a minute.
I don't think but I was like looking at maybe RFK or something like that. And I don't think it's going to be Biden. And I also don't know if it's going to be Trump.
Wait, so are you saying if it's somebody like Gavin Newsom, you would debate that?
Of course not. Okay. Gavin's even worse than Joe.
Okay.
But I don't even know if it's going to be Trump. They're trying to put him in prison. They might be successful. I am not convinced that we're going to have a Trump-Biden showdown in November. For sure, it's not going to be Biden.
I mean, 2 years ago when this was first the talk, I think it's almost been 2 years of talk like this, but I thought for sure no way we'd get to the conventions, no way we'd even get to 2024 this way, but I don't know. This
We're
just keeps going down this road.
If Democrats are going to replace him with someone, they got to do it quick.
Right? I don't know how you do it. I mean, you're just proving everybody right by doing it at this point, right?
Yeah.
So you could have easily, you know, got out of it somehow and said, yeah, you're right, we had to do this. But now we've all called it, and now you're just going to go with what Republicans have been predicting all along. I don't know. I don't know how you get out of this
level. I think they're going to have, it's going to be some medical episode, and he's going to come out and say, oh, I can't run for the presidency, blah, blah, blah. But so, and then Kamala Harris is going to, this is exactly what's going to happen. Mark this, mark it. Kamala Harris is going to say, I got into this with Joe and he's out and I'm out too. And we're going to give a new team an opportunity because they can't have Kamala Harris because she's even more unpopular than Joe Biden. And so then they're going to bring in their Gavin Newsom and whatever ringer, probably Hakeem Jeffries. Gavin Newsom, Hakeem Jeffries. God, I'm good. That's exactly what it's going to be. It's going to be Trump if they haven't put him in prison. Gavin Newsom, Hakeem Jeffries.
Yeah. Okay.
That's it. That's it.
Okay.
And that's exactly how it's going to go down. It's going to go down. Medical issue. Cannot run for president. Kamala's going to bow out with him and act like it's some gracious sentiment when it's Democrats who forced her to do it because no one likes her and she can't string a sentence together. Gavin Newsom, Hakeem Jeffries.
Okay.
There it is. There it is.
I might be more on the, it's going to be Trump and Biden and it's going to be a disaster.
Yeah, either way. Either way, it's going to be a big old disaster. So I'd be curious if you disagree with me. But why would you, you know? I'm so smart and humble and, you know, I'm like, what did I say? Nostra Brandy, just predicting things left and right. All right, this Thursday afternoon, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, Bulwark Capital Zach Abraham is having one of his free risk seminars. You can sign up for it online. He's going to be specifically talking about inflation. Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital, they specialize in managing your risk, right? You only get one retirement. You don't want to put it at risk, but you also have to make sure, especially in this inflationary environment, that you are considering that as you're, especially if you're getting really close to retirement, as you're planning for retirement. How far is your money going to go in retirement? So they're having their inflation seminar. They call it the Silent Portfolio Killer Inflation. This Thursday afternoon, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, with the looming election, continued global unrest, rising cost of living, crazy market volatility, protecting retirement portfolios has never been more critical. That is Bulwark's number one priority. So at the inflation webinar, you're also going to learn how Bulwark Capital is always seeking to lower risk, lower cost, give you as much upside as possible. So don't miss Zach's special inflation webinar this Thursday afternoon, 3:30 p.m. Sign up now, knowyourriskradio.com. Knowyourriskradio.com. It is completely free, no obligation. I think a really good learning opportunity for folks who are concerned about inflation and their retirement savings. So go to knowyourriskradio.com. The little invite for it will just pop up. You can sign up there. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. All right. Questions and comments, shall we? $5 super chat. Who's this from?
Oh, scroll up a little bit. It must have gotten off the...
TZ Burton with a $5 super chat. Brandy, I saw a Common Sense 2024 bumper sticker in Federal Way yesterday. The word is getting out. I'm trying to think if I was in Federal Way. No. Although I don't have one on my car right now because I got a new car and I haven't put it back on, but I do have a Dave Reichert bumper sticker and an American flag. So if you see that combo, probably me. Probably me. Mm-hmm. I love that. I did it. So I donated to Dave Reichert's campaign. And, you know, I get all this mail from people. But I like what he sends because he actually sends stuff you can use. Mm-hmm. So I got a special bright blue Dave Reichert bumper sticker.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah. And I put it on the...
I have sent out hundreds of these stickers, so I'm not surprised you found one in Federal Way.
Oh, we've had...
They're all over.
We've ordered at least 700 Common Sense 2024 bumper stickers, and we're out. We're sold out. We've given a lot away, too, at events and stuff, but there should be 700 of them out there on our roadways. My mom has one on her car in Minnesota, which I think is really sweet.
That is.
Especially since she doesn't agree with my politics on very many things.
It's not specific, though. So
that's true. Common sense is in the eye of the beholder. On our new show open.
I know. You were worried no one would notice. I said,
I wonder if people will notice our new show open. Matt says, oh, snap, new opening. Mm-hmm. Shacho says, oh, the picture of Dory. Yeah, it's up here in the studio. You can't see it. It's like on top of some bookshelves. But I asked Suzanne Monson, I said, would it be okay mm-hmm. if we showed a little picture of Dory in our show open? And she thought that was a great picture of him. And she was perfectly fine with it. Let's see. On Initiative 2066, Erica Dorning says, I want to have a petition at my birthday party. I love that. Just my kind of party.
Any large gathering. There's a lot of graduations coming up in the next few weeks. Yes. Think about it. Take them to your graduations.
Well, June is crunch time.
Take them to the 18-year-olds just getting out.
Yeah.
Sign it right now.
Sign it. Get your name on here. First thing you can do as a voter. On the Trans Runner, Greg Anderson says, women, girls should just stand up and not compete against biological males just to show solidarity with each other. And I agree. You also have to consider, what are they risking, right? Because if you're a standout female athlete and maybe you're trying to get a collegiate scholarship, not competing could be the difference between whether you get a scholarship for college for athletics or not. So it's easy for, I think, us to say, don't compete. But I know that there are a lot of other factors involved in that
decision. I also think it's this issue about this kid. So apparently he or she, whatever, is a nice person. That's what we were told by some of the runners. Right. Well, they're nice, so they didn't want to hurt their feelings. So I think that's a positive, that these kids don't want to hurt feelings right. of the individuals that they're upset with running yeah. against. But it's for the issue, and it's got to be a bigger thing. So not just if you're running against a trans girl. I think it's a bigger issue, and all of yes. the athletes have to get together, and it's not to protest against one specific person. Yeah. It's the whole topic.
Right. We've already said, making this argument about the kids, the trans kids, mm-hmm. that's how you lose the argument. You mm-hmm. make it personal against children. At the end of the day, it's a kid, right? Now, I have no doubt that this kid is nice. But wouldn't it also be nice if you see that you're crushing biological girls and crushing mm-hmm. their hopes and dreams? So,
oh, I'm with you. I'm just saying, I get oh, where yeah. it's hard, and you yeah. don't want to single out one specific child. But yeah. at the same time, that child is being advised poorly.
Yeah.
And we've got to make it a bigger, you know, issue than just one child in each state or whatever it is.
You also consider, like, put yourself in the mind of a 14-year-old girl, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's just use the example of this runner who lost in Kashmir. You're eighth grade, so you're just going to get into high school. You're trying to make friends, keep friends. There's a lot of social pressures. Being trans is all the rage in our schools these days, right? Mm-hmm. And so are you going to be the person who speaks out against this transgender individual competing against you and risk, like, you're probably scared. I get that as a 14-year-old. That's why I don't think it has to be them. You know, if they're brave enough to do it, by all means. But Brandon speaking out for his daughter, and one of the things that, I'll be honest, angered me the most, he said coaches aren't saying anything about it.
Oh, yeah.
And then coaches mm-hmm. know better. Like, shame on you, right? I know you're worried about your job, but if you all, we already said it, you get your coach friend, you know all the other coaches in the district, you call them, you see who's on board, and then you just say, we're not showing up today. You got to fix this.
Fix it.
Have a backbone on mm-hmm. the Rental Housing Association of Washington and Reagan Dunn trying to fix some of what's going on with eviction backlogs, etc. Greg Olakis says, Dirty Dow will never call for an audit. He can't stop lining his pockets. Yeah, Dow could choose to fix this, or at least audit, but he's not going to do that. Of course not.
Should be automatic.
It should. Well, yeah, there should be automatic, at least every other year audits if you're mm-hmm. above a certain threshold of government funding that's coming to you. That's one of the reasons the homeless industrial complex got so out of control, is they just never audit for outcomes. So right. you're giving money to these providers who don't have any outcomes to show for it. Oh, can't, especially if it's a DEI tied thing, if it's a BIPOC organization like we saw in 2020, mm-hmm. where the city's like, give them money, bribe them, maybe we can, they'll give us CHOP back, right. you know, our six, the East Precinct back. And then all that money was just squandered and used to line people's pockets because mm-hmm. they just got it as essentially a bribe because of the color of their skin. Just crazy stuff. Yes. I mean, the street czar. They hired the yes. street czar on a lucrative contract for 6 months, Andre Taylor. Yeah. To build bridges between police and, like, gangs. He barely even showed up. He got this beautiful high-rise office. I visited it. I did an in-depth interview with him when he was the street czar. beautiful high-rise office in the city of Seattle Municipal Building. Beautiful view, all this stuff, lucrative salary. He never even showed up.
$150,000.
Just crazy. Wild, wild, wild. And then they secretly didn't renew it. And I had Jenny Durkin, I think, on this show before she left office, and she acknowledged like it didn't. Nothing was accomplished from it. Mo Sterling, people predicted this would happen when the eviction moratorium went into effect. Yep, backlog, here it is. Liz, in a state full of Dow Constantines via Rag and Dunn. Fair. Wow, can we get that on a t-shirt? Oh, in a state full of Dow Constantines.
That's a good idea.
Be a Rag and Dunn. Oh, I like that.
That's add it to the list. We've been getting a lot of suggestions and requests for new merch.
Listen, so. You guys. You got to buy our shit. No, we have, I want to get rid of the 2024 mm-hmm. stuff because I want you wearing it so people mm-hmm. know mm-hmm. ahead of the 2024 election. But we've got a select number of t-shirts left.
Yep.
A lot of smalls. If you are small, maybe you did the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program and you're newly a size small, undividedpod.com. There's lots of merch there for you. And then in 2025, mm-hmm. we'll have a whole new slate of merch. Pinky promise. Vic Vinegar says, more government to solve problems made by the government. Yep, that sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. Brett Hammond says, every government agency should be audited by private parties, from public assistance to transit, school, parks, courts. The taxpayers deserve this 100%. And why is that controversial? Why would you not want to know, especially, I've said this a million times in Seattle with the homeless thing, if you're, voting to approve new taxes because you just really care and you're empathetic and you want homeless people to get help, and then they're not getting help, despite the fact that you're giving them your hard-earned money, you should want to make sure every dollar is actually going to help the people who are in need. So on the Winluke Museum, I don't know if it's, I think it's Winluke, but it might be Winluke, but I'm going to call it Winluke until somebody corrects me. Country Guy says, where do I get an employer that cheers me while I'm walking off the job? As a boss, I would tell them to just keep walking.
Everyone is so scared of protests.
Yep.
They're so scared.
It's fascinating. Ugh. It's a fascinating place that we're in because it's happened so mm-hmm. much. Like it's it happens in liberal places especially, but what is the phenomenon? It's an interesting yes. phenomenon. It's like mm-hmm. you can do anything. You can protest your own employer. Amazon workers?
Yep.
Protesting Amazon and then they're not locked out of the building. Google was the one who fired the protesters finally. Who occupied yep. a boss's building, which I thought was great.
Well, they were in his office. They were in his face.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
So can't mm-hmm. have that. On mm-hmm. the presidential race, Anna Burt says, I think Kamala would run. I don't see her step aside and try to find someone to run against Trump. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures says, Brandy, call Las Vegas. They're taking bets on this. Okay. I go to Las Vegas at the end of every September. So if I find a place to bet there on that, go. Like I'm okay. in.
I think that Kamala comment is good because that's kind of my theory is that they don't really care if she's president or not. Of course she could not win.
Right.
But if Biden runs and then he dies a couple months later or something, she's in and they don't yeah. care who's in. They just need a mouthpiece.
Right. But only once she's there. Like if he wins and then she just by virtue of being the vice right. president becomes the president, that's different. They know she can't win.
Right.
And so that's why I think if Biden had to step away pre-election, yes. I think they'd find a way to bypass her. She would basically yes. be told, like, we yes. will bury you.
I agree with that. I am saying I think they'll just run Biden because they don't care who takes over after he's gone.
That's
and they,
a good point.
For some reason, think he mm-hmm. can win again.
Yeah, I don't know. The Robert De Niro press conference tells me otherwise, yeah. or that they might be starting to question
or
that.
Just by the pictures of Biden this weekend at Memorial speeches and stuff. I mean, he looked rough.
Yeah. He only doesn't look rough when suddenly, like, he goes from rough, rough, rough to just like alert and wake and yeah. all of a sudden there. I'm like, okay, a drug test. Somebody yeah. stick his arm with a needle. Let's get some blood.
Wow, you're starting to sound like Trump now.
Oh, wow. What an eye-opening 4 years it's been, truly. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? Speaking of an eye-opening 4 years, I'm ashamed to admit that I once really, really, really wanted Pete Buttigieg to be the president of the United States. Like, was his number one fan. really glad that I took a step back from that. Pete Buttigieg was on Face the Nation. Got to give Margaret Brennan a lot of credit. I really still think she's one of the few in mainstream network news who does a good job on interviews. And she ranked Pete Buttigieg over the coals. So one of the topics was about EVs. We know that they aren't popular with Americans. Trump has said so, and she played Pete Buttigieg a clip of what Trump had to say and asked him to respond to it.
Do you notice he's trying to save the electrical vehicle, but not the gas-powered, which is the vehicle that everybody wants? They're going crazy with the electric car, costing us a fortune. We're spending hundreds of billions of dollars subsidizing a car that nobody wants and nobody's ever going to buy.
He's not wrong.
Oh, he's
on the purchasing. He's not. Of the 4 million vehicles purchased, you know, what, 269,000 electric vehicles were sold in the U.S. market. It's up like 2%.
Every single year, more Americans buy EVs than the year.
Well,
this is really important.
More quickly.
Every single year, more Americans buy EVs than the year prior.
Because the government is forcing manufacturers to make more of them. It was interesting to hear Margaret Brennan say, no, he's right. Pete say he's wrong. And things got a little bit testier from there. So she points out that there's all of this funding, millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to build charging stations, yet they have built virtually none.
The Federal Highway Administration says only 7 or 8 charging stations have been produced with a $7.5 billion investment that taxpayers made back in 2021. Why isn't that happening more quickly?
So the president's goal is to have 500,000 chargers up by the end of this decade. Now, in order to do a charger, it's more than just plunking a small device into the ground. There's utility work, and this is also really a new category of federal investment. But we've been working with each of the 50 states. Every one of them is getting formula dollars to do this work, engaging them
though?
In the first handful, again, by 2030, 500,000 chargers.
Even Margaret Brennan laughs at him. $7.5 billion. They've only built 7 or 8. But yeah, you're definitely on track to put in 500,000 by the end of the decade. And then for our sanity check, let's end with this head scratcher.
The reality is the effects of climate change are already upon us in terms of our transportation. We've seen that in the form of everything from heat waves that shouldn't statistically even be possible, mm-hmm. threatening to melt the cables of transit systems in the Pacific Northwest.
Huh. Well, that's news to me. All right, that has been our sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. If you have not signed up to support our show already, we sure would appreciate it. You can sign up for just $5 a month at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. While you're there, you can shop our merch store 25% off with the promo code SANITY24. That's SANITY and the number 24. See you tomorrow.